Welcome to another episode of the Bounce Back Bogey podcast. This is episode 13. We are joined by, we can call him a recurring guest now, Mr. Chris Hevener, a fan favorite. We are talking a little bit of the Valero Texas Open, but we are spending most of our time talking about the greatest week in golf. That's right. It is Masters Week. We are going to cover everything. Craig, how excited are you for the Masters this year?
I'm pumped. Previous years, I haven't really got as much time off on the weekends as I got this year. So I got all of Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, and I don't plan on leaving my couch. There's probably a good chance like one in the mornings I'll be quite hungover, and like it usually means like a 3-hour nap. So I'll probably black out there for a little bit. But besides that, yeah, I can't wait.
Unreal. Bray, are you excited?
Absolutely. It's Masters Week. It's the best week, as you said, on the golf calendar. Ever since the last major last year finished, which was kind of a dud with Brian Harman kind of running away with it at the British. I look forward to the first major next year. Obviously, we had the Players and some decent events earlier this year, but nothing compares to major championships, especially the Masters. So totally. Really looking forward to it.
And for you listeners, you can't see our guest right now, but he showed up with a Masters memorabilia wall wearing a green jacket this week. So I can only assume.
I can only assume
that he's a little excited for this week. Hevs, do you love Masters Week more than anything?
This is my Christmas, man. Like I spent, it's that weird period of time where you're not a kid, so you don't really get excited for much anymore other than like going down to the Roxy on a Saturday night with the boys. So like now that I'm a fully fledged dad of three, like this is it. And the best part is it's a week. Like I used to think when they're like, oh, Monday's Masters Week, the start of Masters Week, I was like, ah, that's kind of lame. Now I'm like, yeah, it's Masters Week.
How the hell did you get that jacket? Did you stitch that on the logo? Yeah, so
The jacket was just for all the listeners. The shade of green is Pantone 342. that's what the committee hands you when you win. So I bought a blazer off eBay, and then it's not too hard to find a patch. So I got that put on, professionally done, obviously. If anybody is friends with any members, please don't tell them because I think they'll come and confiscate it.
You couldn't have found a blazer that fit, though? Like, usually those green jackets are so snug. That thing's kind of hanging off you a little bit.
No, it's a 40 regular.
Oh, no, it does.
With the gold buttons. I mean, we're pretty good here. But it's a little awkward sitting down here because I'm sitting in my master's chair that I got.
Your kids can't go to college now because of your master's memorabilia.
Only two are going anyway, so let's be honest.
I feel like the cool thing to talk about is that two of the four people on this podcast today have actually attended the Masters and gotten lucky. Bray, you got to experience a little bit of a rainy weekend in 2018, was it?
2019, yeah. 2019. Good friend, future pod guest Jordan Hutchings won the Masters lottery, and I was one of his roommates, good friends. He was in my wedding party recently, so he took me. Thank you, Jordan, very much. It was the Monday practice round of the 2019 Masters. 2019 Masters is the year that Tiger Woods won it, so it's freaking sick. Obviously, would have been way cooler to be there on Sunday, but the practice round is awesome in itself because you get to walk the course. You get to like go on the driving range, see them hit balls, just see them kind of shoot the shit. Like Tiger played with Freddie and JT. We were in the grandstands on 16, watching them putt and chip around the 15th green, and then just sat on 16 for a while. Just guys just flushing high draws into 16. It's just so cool to see them so close. Like you guys have been to PGA Tour events before too, but like Webb Simpson, not someone that I think of as a flusher. He's had some shanks in the past. Absolute flush.
Like, all.
Oh, yeah. No, we all have. But like seeing him hit a high flush high draw in 16 was like really cool. All those guys, but yeah, it got rained out. I think we left the course at 1:30 or so, but had enough time to see a lot of the course, and down 10 beers. I may have got a little bit too drunk. When we went to the merchandise shop, the pro shop, I got some clothes for myself and, wanted to get some shirts for Sabrine, my wife, who was, my girlfriend at the time. And I was a little bit too tipsy and accidentally got kids' shirts for her, like super, super small. So I was like, oh shit, we are destined to have girls now. Nothing wrong with girls, Pevs. Yeah, we ended up having a little boy. So that was good. But I think we're due to have at least one girl in the future because I've got two little Masters shirts for her.
It's 2024. You could just give the boy the girl shirts.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
And Hevs, you went in, you said 2018, correct? You got to see this. You got to see the Sunday, which is pretty sweet in itself.
Yeah. I mean, I could talk your ear off for a whole hour on this. Like it was wild. Got lucky through the lottery again, got two tickets. Took my buddy Sheldon. He was so nonchalant. We picked him up and we're carpooling. I was like, hey, you want to go to the Masters? He's like, yeah, sure. And so we went down there. We did the whole bang. We got there super early. It was a beautiful, beautiful day. Thought we were going to be first in line. We got there at about 4:30 and we were like 300th in line. People had, I think, camped all night. And I didn't expect Georgia to be that cold overnight. It was like quite cold. Until the sun came out, but it was gorgeous. It's one of the rare places, especially Amen Corner on a sunny day, that's actually better than a photograph. Like you get down there, we walked the course first. We went frontwards and backwards.
Yeah.
And no one's around there. And you can't access like 13T, 11 green, 12 green. So it's just like immaculate, and so it's a religious experience for someone like a psycho like me.
So did you just camp on, obviously you walked the course, but after that did you camp on Amen Corner? Did you follow a group? What was your strategy for watching?
Well, so we got through, so they let you in waves. I don't know if they did that on the practice round. They let you in waves, so groups of 50. The security's tight, like it could be like a presidential motorcade going through there, like it's crazy. So they let you through in waves. We went to Walmart the night before and bought these little pink chairs to set down first, because as soon as you set down a chair, it's yours. We beelined it to 18 green, and you know, doing the speed walk, you don't want to run, and I was like 50 yards away from the back of 18 green, and a dude in the green jacket is like, sir, please no running. And I was like, this is speed walking. And I was going to argue with him because my knees were locking. Like it wasn't speed walking, but I was moving. And so we put our chairs down on 18 and we're like, oh man, like I thought we'd have better seats. And then we came back after we got all our stuff and put our green chairs back, and 30 rows had filled out. And we're like, our seats are actually pretty fucking sick. Like nice. We were like sixth row. And so we walked the whole course. We ended up camping out on 18 as like the leaders came through and stuff like that. But the great thing about the Masters is if no one's sitting in a chair, you can just sit down. And if they show up, you got to go. Mm. So we sat on 12T. And it's weird because I've watched so many other Masters and the seating arrangement has changed from year to year. But when we sat on 12T, we got right up against the ropes. I could have reached out and pulled on these guys' shirts. And so we're watching, you know, Doug Gim, all these guys come through, Tiger comes through. I literally could have reached out and grabbed his hog. Like that's how close we were. And watching him hit, you know, like they all hit those little cuts, they aim at the tongue. Doug Gim, I think, accidentally hit a draw, but he got lucky and it came back. So everybody's like, oh, nice shot. And he was kind of like, but yeah, like we walked around the course, we followed Ricky and Rory and all that. But I mean, walking the course is the best part, is just because the greens are so small. Oh my God. Like what? We went stood so small.
Some
we
of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like 14 green. Did you go behind 14 or 17? It's like a joke. It's so undulating that you went behind it and you can't believe that it's an actual green guys are playing on, because it's so cliche. The camera angles don't do it justice, yada, yada, yada. But it's so much fun, man.
Yeah. The sections of the greens are small, especially, but like five green, I think, is fairly large, but it's obviously like the huge slope in it and whatnot. But I remember walking. Exactly. I remember walking down one and like being like, these guys usually have, I don't know, like 150 to 170 into one. And like sections of the screen are absolutely tiny. Like it is not an easy opening hole. Like one's pretty freaking hard.
Do you want to know something hilarious? I've watched countless Masters. I had no idea the valley on one after the first tee. The first tee, if you guys don't know, it drops down like 70 feet and then comes back up where the bunkers are. And so we get in there because that's where you walk in. You walk in and first tee's to your left, fairways to your right, and it's just a giant valley. And I was like, because you never get that depth perception. That's where the walkways are. But yeah, it's wild, man.
One of the things that I've heard from people that have attended are like the undulation of the fairways and the greens, like that's one thing that the TV, like it tries to show it, but you actually have no idea how steep and how downhill some of the shots actually are.
It's so impossible. Like guys always talk about the third on 15, if you have to lay up like that, thinking about that gives me shivers. Like
that. I got a quick question, or like quick story and question. So obviously you hear everything about Augusta and it's like the sub airs under the greens and like all the stuff they do on the golf course is insane. Like not a single thing out of place. So there's a member of the course I work at and he plays Augusta like three times a year, usually, which is sick. And he was telling me last time he was there, he was walking with a caddy and he's looking at the trees and like looking at the ground. And he's like, there's no pine cones. And they're like, oh, no, absolutely not. And he's like, wait. And he's like, what else do you notice? And he's like, the like pine straw doesn't match the trees. And the caddy apparently said that they import all the pine straw because the shit that falls from the trees is so ugly.
I wouldn't put it past anything. Like they my uncle's an arborist and they've transplanted like full grown pines and firs. And he's like, do you know the price tag on like one full-grown pine tree? Like, it's wild. It's like $300,000, and they're just shipping these things in. Like, the money is no object, man. It's crazy. But yeah, like, it's stupid. Like, immaculate conditions. Like, you could turn around to a little dark corner of the property, and it's immaculate. Like, it's so crazy.
Yeah, and everything is run so efficiently. Like, you mentioned the security line. Going to the bathroom, going to get a beer, going like I know we just mentioned the bathroom, and it like blew my mind. It's like going to, I think they hired Disney World or like Disney to like help streamline how they run things, going through the merchandise, like pro shop area, whatever, going to get a beer, going to get a sandwich. It's like everything is so efficient. There's not a blade out of place. It's amazing, the whole property.
Especially when it fills up, like Sunday afternoon, it fills up. And like you said, like the bathroom line, like you get to a line, you're like, oh my God, I'm going to miss so much. You're in and out. We did the merchandise check. So you check your stuff, you go back with a ticket, and they have to go back and get it all. Literally by the time I handed a ticket, turned around to say something to my buddy, they were handing it to me. Like it's crazy. Like for all the crap they might get in terms of like, you know, their questionable history, like they run an efficient ship.
I love that. We're gonna get into a lot of Masters content today, but before we do that, I did want to just comment on the Valero very quickly. Another very exciting PGA Tour tournament. The LIV Golf Tour went to a playoff this week as well, but I feel like absolutely no one watched it. The Valero seemed like it was going to be a cakewalk for Akshay Bhatia, and then Denny McCarthy decides to shoot 28 8 under on the back nine, birdieing his last seven holes, which was very cool to see. I'm gonna go to Craig first on this. Did you happen to watch any golf this week?
Shocked you're going to me first. Yeah, I didn't watch any. I was super busy with work. April and September are the worst times of the year for staffing a golf course. But yeah, I saw the fist pump and I heard he threw his shoulder out. So you guys will have to, I'm gonna ask you about this. Was it like a Tiger injury where he's just building the drama, or do you think he actually kind of threw his shoulder out?
I do not fucking believe it for a second. No. So apparently his shoulder popped out and then popped back into his socket really quickly, but it was just really sore. But I don't see that being a thing. I thought it was incredibly weird once his playing partner in the playoff like chunked one 50, like I'm gonna say 30, 35 yards short of the green into the creek. And then instead of just like hitting his ball and ending the tournament, he called in a trainer to take him somewhere private to tape up his shoulder and then to hit his wedge shot after that, which I thought was a very weird thing to do. Bray, what did you think about that whole
Okay.
situation?
Yeah. So I didn't watch any golf. It was my wife's birthday Sunday. So shout out Sabrine. Happy birthday. So wasn't watching any golf. And we saw that it was going to a playoff because the group chat was blowing up our phones like, oh, 28 on the back nine for McCarthy. Got to turn it on. So we did. We're watching. And literally the first shot we see is McCarthy chunk it into the water, way
Yeah.
short, like you said. And then we don't have the sound on. And we're like, what the hell is going on? It is the weirdest fucking scene I'd ever seen. We got this little Asian quant dude like walking out onto the fairway. Like, who the hell is this
I thought
guy?
he was 12 years old at first.
Yeah. I had no clue what was going on. And then someone in our group chat was like, yeah, Akshay threw out his shoulder. Fist pumping on the 18th hole to force the playoff, which he's 110 pounds soaking wet. So that's just like, I don't know, golfers aren't athletes, I guess, that you can just throw out your shoulder fist pumping. But anyway, the taping didn't take too long, but I thought it was super weird. You've got the tournament basically locked up. Just hit your wedge to the middle of the green and two putt and you're done. But anyway, it didn't take too long, and he hit it close and made the birdie to end in style. So good
So
for him.
Hevs, did you watch any golf this weekend?
Yeah, I watched Thursday, Friday. Had to work nights, so missed Saturday, but caught Sunday. And I have a theory that actually did a 2 minute little quick interview with Dan Rappaport, and he asked him, "What is your goal as a professional golfer?" And his first answer was 2 million subscribers on YouTube.
Come
And
on.
serious. And he's backpedaled since, because even Rappaport's like, what? And I'm thinking, like, this is FaceTime. This is like, he's getting so much TV time fucking playing this shoulder injury out. Like, they're just saying his name more and more and more. I think, like, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he knew what he's doing, because, like, you gotta be like, that's soft if you're
It was so it was
the
such a weird situation, and like, yeah, I couldn't believe that what was going on when he was, and they were like talking to him right before a shot, and they're like, hey, can we just like tape it right here? And he's like, no, like, can we go somewhere private? And I was like, what are you doing?
Altuve's got mics on under him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was wild. The only downside to Akshay winning is he uses the broomstick putter, which I hate.
Lovely. Love that.
Lefties
Love
in their
that.
broomstick. Yeah, don't love that, but I do love that he is a skinny guy but generates a lot of power. That's fun to see. He can move the ball for how small he was. But McCarthy, seven straight birdies to force a playoff. Mike, you've shot 60. What's your record for consecutive birdies or consecutive holes under par, like eagles included, in a
I
tournament?
think six in a tournament. That's
Was
not,
that the round you
and
shot 60?
no, it was at a BCM in like 2014 or 2015, something like that.
When you almost won.
No,
Oh,
different one.
different
Damn.
one.
Fuck. dickhead. But at least in my playoff, I sculled it over the green. I didn't chunk it into the water.
So much better.
The one thing that I was actually surprised at is when McCarthy is playing that well and all the momentum is on his side and he hits it. I thought actually on 18, Akshay hit it outside of McCarthy, but McCarthy putted first. And when McCarthy made it, I was like, oh, this is done. There's no way he's making this putt. And then he dropped it on top of him. And I was like, that's take some stones for sure. Mm-hmm.
I thought the tournament was over on Saturday. What was like 6-shot lead going into Sunday? I thought it was over. And Akshay played well Sunday too. It's not like he very choked, well. Like choked it away. Denny just went out and got it. Yeah. I know what you're saying. If you're in that spot, you played well all week. You kind of had it not in the bag, but pretty freaking close. And then your opponent rolls one in and all of a sudden you have to make a 10 or 12 footer to force a playoff. Yeah. That takes some stones. So good for him.
It shows how good those guys are though, right?
Like, yeah.
6-shot lead. You write WTW on your wrist, like calling the ball. Like you better win now, buddy.
That's also like that. I do not like that.
That is wait, what was so, WTW?
He wrote WTW on his wrist before the final round, like in front of a camera, because he wanted it to say wire to wire.
Oh, this guy's a fucking loser.
Yeah.
I am anti-Batia.
Yeah.
So does it count now as wire-to-wire win?
Oh, yeah. It's still wire-to-wire.
If it goes to playoff, though?
Yeah.
He wasn't leading. Okay. Okay. No,
it's wire-to-wire still.
Fair enough.
That's basically all I want to say about the Valero. I have something from the Valero that I'm going to cancel later on in the show. But I'm going to hold on to that for now. I just really want to get into the Masters content because I feel like that's the most fun we can have this week.
What about Live Miami?
Craig, do you want to touch on Live Miami? Because you're such a pro Live guy.
I loved it. It was incredible. Didn't watch a second. I don't even know who won. The one thing I wanted to touch on was
Dino. Fuck.
Good thing,
and he kind of hinted that he should have got a Masters invite.
It just keeps writing itself.
That's so good.
And Greg Norman said Taylor Gooch is the best iron player he's ever seen.
No. Yeah.
Forget it.
Okay, one thing I did have though that we should talk about is Nelly with four wins. Yes. Well,
that is absolutely. Yeah. Shocking to win four events in a row. Like that is bizarre.
I'm saying she should get a PGA invite ASAP.
She should get the next one for sure.
Yeah. Like I genuinely think I'm not saying she will, but she could obviously if she had like a few starts, I think she makes a cut.
Honest question though, really quick. What's the point? And I'm not trying to be a dick. She's won four in a row. She's dominating her own gender. Like, if anything, I feel like it would be like killing her momentum to be like, okay, like now go like play on a way bigger course against like arguably like tougher competitors. Like, I'm not slagging the women's game.
You're,
at all. I love watching the women's game.
You're right about that. I think it would do absolutely nothing but kind of like, I don't think it would help her career at all. I think it would hurt it. But I think it would be one of those situations where we're in 2024 and she's won four events in a row and people are like, oh, let's see how she compares against the guys right now, which doesn't help her at all. Like she's not gonna play very well in a tournament like that.
And honestly, it takes a little bit of the shine off too. Like I remember when Annika played and she admitted to not being able to feel her hands on the tee and she struggled to make the cut. And like I said, I don't want to take the shine away from it, but it does kind of kill like the myth. Like, like Annika was killer. And then all of a sudden she gets one start on the PGA Tour and she's like reduced to trembling on a first tee. Like what?
Yeah.
I was just going to say like, don't do it now. Do it after all the women's majors, do it in the fall or something. I think that then you don't lose momentum. Like she's obviously crushing on the LPGA. Go win one or two majors this year. And then if you want to have a crack at the PGA Tour in the fall, if she wants to, like if she says no, that's cool too. But I think in the fall would be a good time because like fall golf is kind of dead anyway, that brings a little bit of a spark to just like compare it, you know?
I think that's the perfect answer. Like, don't, like you guys said, don't take away her momentum. She has a chance to have like a milestone season, especially if she can put a like a major, like a couple, like anything's possible. She could fucking win the grants. I don't know. Has a woman's major happened yet?
No. I don't think so.
Yeah. So like she could have like a grand slam kind of year. Obviously that's like an insane thing to say, but like even if she has one or two, like, and the pace she's winning at, it will be awesome. And then yeah, come the fall, like that would cap off an unbelievable season if she can make a cut on the guys tour.
Head to head, give me the odds on who would be more likely to win a grand slam this year, Scotty or Nelly?
Nelly.
Well, women's, there's five majors, right?
Yeah.
Is there? I didn't know that.
Hevs might know. He's our...
Yeah, it's like kind of up in the air. It's not
official.
Like a purchased major, if you will. But I don't know, man. Like, what makes it so impressive is there's just as much parity on the women's game.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many killers out there. I mean, they're just not familiar names, but I would say still, though, probably Scotty. Like, it's just so insane that guys have won all four, let alone won four in a row.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many wins does Scotty have this year?
Two.
I feel like you have to go with Nelly. Four straight, and Scotty's got demons on the greens. Like, I don't know. I don't think it's... I'm giving the edge to Nelly, but I think it's like a 50-50. I think it's a coin flip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're both dominating. And bearded Scotty is back at the Masters, apparently. So yeah. I think that might throw a wrench in the odds.
With all that said, are we ready to jump into Masters content?
It's Masters week, baby. Let's go.
Okay. So we're gonna start this off with a very simple question. I'm going to go to Mr. Braden Brown first. Not counting the 2019 Masters, because I think a lot of us would count that. What is your favorite Masters in your lifetime that you've watched?
Okay. So 2005 was the first time that I remember watching golf and like remembering it. Obviously, I had watched golf before, but had no context or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't really have the context. I'd heard the name Tiger Woods. I wasn't like a huge, huge golf fan at this point. I was 10 years old, but I remember where I was. I was in grade, I don't know what grade I was in exactly, four or five, but like doing math homework on a Sunday afternoon. And I saw the famous Tiger chip in, the best Nike commercial ever, where chips in, obviously everyone knows, rolls down the hill on 16 and falls in the lip with the Nike swoosh. So that one, like, I saw that shot and was like, holy shit, golf's cool. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
So that one. But since then, I became more of a golf fan. I think 2011 was awesome. Tiger didn't win. Charles Schwartzel ended up winning, which isn't the best finish.
Mm-hmm.
But Tiger made a sick, sick run on the front nine. He hit a big swooping draw three wood on eight and rolled in the eagle putt, big fist pump. Had a few just like sick momentum birdies, and everyone was kind of, it was anyone's ball game going into the back nine. And it was also the year that Rory collapsed. And I'm not saying this was my favorite major because he collapsed, but it was cool that like you can have a big lead and something bad happens. So I think 2011 was pretty sick. It was also big, Tiger shot on 15, second shot.
Yeah,
club twirl of the millennium, like the best fucking thing ever. Club twirl, walk after it.
Hits no it to big like deal.
6 feet.
I'm trying to remember, but did Schwartzel like birdied maybe his last three or last four as well? Four. Didn't he? Last four.
Yeah. But yeah, 2011. I watched that one on YouTube. The final round every so often. It's pretty sick. Yeah.
I know Hevs is going to have a good answer, but I'm going to Craig next.
Yeah. Okay. So 2005, I've only seen highlights. I didn't watch golf. Like, I refused to watch golf as a kid. 2011, but kind of for a different reason, because that's when I like got into it. And that was like the tournament that got me into watching golf. So I just started like playing golf, but I was like, I love, this is insane. And I remember like, I was convinced I was swinging like Rory. Like I watched Rory swing and I'm like, yeah, I'm doing that now. And then the choke was like, the drama of Rory's choke was so hard to watch, but you couldn't look away. Yeah. And it was like, he was kind of fumbling on the front nine and giving it up. And then as soon as he sniped it on 10, and then what did he do? He sniped it, punched out, and then sniped like a three wood, right? Yeah. He had to punch out basically.
Sniped it left again.
Yeah. And he was like in this spot that no one's ever seen anybody on 10, basically at Augusta, I think.
They were
like
trying to figure out if his ball was out of bounds because it was so close to the houses.
Yeah. So that was so cool.
That's where Clifford Roberts used to watch the tournament when he was in his dying days. He used to sit at that cabin, and people are like, we didn't even know there were cabins.
Who the fuck is Clifford Roberts?
He was the first chairman of Augusta National.
Holy shit.
Chris can probably name every chairman ever.
I'm fucking dying.
That's so good.
And then obviously I think you said not to say 19, yeah. But 19 was just fucking sweet. I think underrated one, just for the year and like how the fact Augusta made it happen, 2020, I think was in the fall. I think was so, like, it wasn't the same tournament, but it was so cool. I don't know. It was like you saw a different golf course.
Yeah,
totally.
I disagree. Everyone else agrees on this call, but I disagree. I thought that one was kind of, because there were no fans. You don't get the roars. That's what makes Augusta so cool. It's like the roars. I know what you're saying. It was good to see it in a different season, whatever. DJ's a good champion, but it wasn't the same.
Does his Masters win count or is it an asterisk?
No.
It counts because he has a US Open as well. If it was his only major... It would have a big asterisk, but because he has another one to validate it, it's like when you win a skin, you got to validate it with a par on the next hole. He validated it with his 20 whatever Oakmont US Open win.
Good take.
Yeah, the Sunday that year sucked. Like as far as you want the roars, but I just thought like the build up and everything and the fact they made it happen, that's my point. That part was kind of cool.
Okay. Mr. Chris Hevner. What's your answer here? What's your favorite Masters?
Oh, well, we got a list of about 18 here. We're going to go down one by one. No, I'm just kidding. Because I'm like 25 years older than you guys. I'm going to say if you had to give me one and 2019 wasn't included, it would be 2001 because Tiger was going for the slam. Imagine the pressure that is on you. And that's the difference between, like, Scotty can ball strike the shit out of the ball all he wants, put up stroke gain numbers. Tiger got it done. Tiger won when he was supposed to win. The top three that year were Tiger, Duval, and Phil. I'm pretty sure that was 1, 2, 3 in the OWGR. It's insane to hold all four at the same time. Inarguably, like, I know it's... shoot 23 years ago now, but it is the modern era. Like it's you can't even wrap your mind around it, and not only the pressure, but he handled the pressure the best.
I came across like a post as either on Twitter or Instagram, and it had Tiger's odds every single year that he's played in the Masters, and I was just looking through some of them in like the early 2000s, mid 2000s, and at one point he was -125 to win the Masters.
2007,
which is just wild,
field, man. Like it was insane. And golf, it skewed the minds of all of our generation. Like, oh, like golf is easy. You're just supposed to win all the time. Yeah. And like Haney had a good quote in his book that like great players have like an 18% win rate. Like generational players have an 18% win rate. When Tiger was with Haney, he had like a 55% win rate. Like, it's so stupid.
Okay, I got a quick question for you guys, only because I know we're probably all gonna have the same answer. What's your favorite major of all time?
Oh, great question.
Oh man.
Do you want me to start? Because I have this in my head. Or should I let you guys go?
Well, why don't we hear Mike's favorite Masters first?
Do I get a turn, Craig?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Canceled Mike.
Lives matter.
I have two. My first one, and this is I have two that are kind of similar. Both of them were kind of known as major championship chokers and not good putters. So my first one that I remember watching and I was like, this is really, really sick that he finally got it done, was in 2013 when Adam Scott won.
Yes.
And
one of the best fist pumps of all time.
And the craziest thing is that it was fucking pissing rain on Sunday, and Adam Scott got into the clubhouse leading by one, and Cabrera had like on 18 he had like 170 or 175 yards left in, and he hit like the most pure sounding iron off of wet grass to like 2 feet and tapped it in, and I was like, oh my god, there's no way Adam Scott wins this now.
The best part is when Cabrera was like standing over his approach shot, you knew that he had balls of steel because he told the gallery to shut up. He goes, quiet, please. He's like very authoritative because he used to be a street fighter like back in Argentina. Like that guy can whoop ass. And so, he
beats his wife pretty good.
Fuck up. He was about to hit that shot and then to pull it off.
Yeah, that was, I really like that one. And then the other one that I thought was really sick, also a guy that was known for choking in majors, 2017 when Sergio won. I thought that was also very cool because he looked like on the back nine at one point that he was going to choke it away. I think he duck hooked one into the bushes on 13 and had a questionable, like, was the pine straw or his ball moving at one point. And then he hit a sick shot on 15 off the pin on his second shot to like 10 or 11 feet and rolled that in. And then he had a putt to win on 18 from 5 feet and missed it.
And once you miss that, you think it's over.
You think it's over. I'm like, this guy's not going to win.
Yeah.
So that,
how many times have you seen that?
Yeah. I thought that was a very good one as well.
Were you guys rooting for him or Rosie?
Rosie.
I wanted Sergio to break through in a major. I'll admit it.
Sergio.
I hate him so much. It's
a feel-good moment for like 45 seconds, and you're like, oh, fuck, he's going to be there every year.
Okay, Craig, go ahead with your favorite major of all time. I feel most of mine would be Masters related.
No, mine's so easy. Like, I'm talking about like the year and the whole event, 08 US Open. Hands down, can't be beat. Like, I don't think that'll ever be topped.
Was that
right?
That was one of the most, arguably one of the most impressive athletic feats I've ever seen in my life.
Dude, like, our teacher had it pulled up on his computer. He's like, guys, like, you have to watch this. Like, you don't understand what's happening. This is incredible. And like the whole class was watching. It was so cool.
I was bartending at Joey's, and the kitchen guy was with me. We're standing watching the TVs at the bar. As he stood over that putt and he looks at me, he's like, he's making this, right? I'm like, 1,000%.
Yeah.
And it was to the point where like everybody's like, well, of course he makes it, right? Like,
Rocco was in the clubhouse being like, yeah, I know he was going to make it.
Hugging everyone.
The day before I'd play a tournament, like junior tournament or college tournament, I'd pull up Tiger Woods 18th hole 2008 final round and watch him play that hole to force a playoff. I thought that was just like the sickest moment.
If my answer isn't that, it's probably the 2019 Masters. I thought, like, doesn't get any better than that.
No, it's our generation's version of 86. I mean, like, we'll tell our kids, like he came back from the dead.
He did. Okay, Craig, that was a good question. Can you contribute like that a little bit more often, though?
What are you talking about? I'm just here to make jokes and edit the pod. That's it.
Okay, next question. We're going to Hebs first. What is your favorite hole at the Masters? And what is the most overrated hole at the Masters?
Favorite hole, I would say 5 is so good because it's so hard. And I think the way the green is laid out really plays to like the initial ideology of what Bobby Jones wanted was like an inland links course. Like, Bobby Jones loved links. So when he designed it with Alistair McKenzie, that's one of the only greens that have relatively stayed the same. And you can see it, like, if you go eye level with five, it's like waves, man. It's crazy. And they stretched it out, and you can see guys, as soon as they blow one right or they hang one left, they're screwed. Like, if you ever see a guy in those left fairway bunkers, it's like 20 feet tall. Up until a couple of years ago, when Anwell was showing different camera angles, which is amazing that they do this, I thought 12 was kind of overrated, until I learned that the angle of 12 green actually works away from a right-hander, and I don't think a lot of people know that. And so a lot of guys, they're so conscious of the wind, because if they fan that out and start spinning, that's why you see all those water balls, is because the green actually works away. Another reason why Phil has got he's got three, right? Because he can play the opposite shot, faded into the other way.
Yeah.
Phil, Bubba, and Mike Weir, all lefties that have won there. It's no, yeah, it's a thing.
And then 10, Braden, did you ever walk down 10?
Oh, yeah.
10
was the one where I noticed the undulation the most. It's so sick.
You could toboggan down that hill.
Oh, yeah.
Standing there, we were standing there just watching guys rip three wood draws. And it was like the sexiest thing in the world, like Rose, Adam Scott. And then you start walking down there. Now, what I really like about 10 is they've got it designed so if you do bail out right, you are so far back.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the coolest shots I've seen is they had a Brooks was like 220 out, and they had the camera behind him, and the angle of the camera, the ball flight didn't leave the camera screen. And so he hit like, I don't know, maybe a 5-iron or something, but it was just, you can get a real like idea of how far back those guys are and how those, how the fairways undulate so much.
Yeah. There's not many holes in the modern game where you absolutely have to hit a shot shape. Like, you can usually play your stock shot, whatever that is, draw or fade. But if you want to play hole 10 to the best of your ability, it has to move right to left to get it running down that hill, or you have so far in. And that's not a shot that you want to have like 220 in.
And the green surrounds are crazy. There's no good spot to leave it if you miss that green. Like, one of the best up and downs I've seen a couple years ago or last year, Brooks was far back right on the slope to a back right pin. I don't know how he got it up and down, but like, you've seen guys just blow it. Like in 87, a lot of people think of the Mises chip in on 11 when he beat Norman. Nobody knows that Seve was in that playoff, and he missed 10 green, didn't get up and down for par, and it was booted out of the playoff.
Your knowledge for the Masters is the fucking best, I gotta say.
I'm kind of embarrassed, but I've always wondered about the fairway bunker in 10, because it doesn't come into play. It's so weird, right? It's just like 30 yards short of the green. So it turns out when Alistair McKenzie built the 10th hole, that's right where the green was. But because the drain was so poor there that it would never dry. And so what they actually did was Perry Maxwell came in and he built the current green behind it, and they left the bunker there just because aesthetically it was so pleasing.
You have to be reading this off Wikipedia. There's no chance.
No, my computer's turned off right now. I'm actually on my cell phone.
Holy shit. Name drop all these guys? Like, obviously we know Alistair McKenzie, but you just listed some like obscure guy. Something Perry. Corey Perry.
Yeah.
That's so good. And Chris, if you have a hole at the Masters that you there's not very many, but if you have a hole that you don't really care to see on broadcast, what is it?
14. I think 14. It's weird. It's once the Eisenhower tree came down, it kind of lost a lot of its juice. And you get all this hype, like 12 sick, right? Approaching 11 sick. I feel like it's kind of like a lull. Like guys are just trying to get through 14. The only thing great about 14 is the shot that Rom hit from the right side of it last year. It was the coolest thing in the world, because the way Immelman talked it out, he guessed what he was going to do. And like, same thing, the camera caught the ball going up, starting to cut, and everybody was silent. And Immelman just goes, yep. Like, it's so good.
I love
it. Hey, I have to call Chris's our historian of the Masters. The Eisenhower tree was on 17, not 14. Had to call him out for the one thing that he didn't get correct. Yeah, but I do agree with your take. 14 is kind of a... green is kind of cool, though. There's some fun slopes in 14 green. Yeah. But
you can get the ball moving on the green for sure. Bray, what's your favorite hole at Augusta?
I think it's cool and fun to watch anytime someone's going for a par 5 and 2, which is pretty much every par 5 there. But 13, especially with Rays Creek running across, it's just a high variance hole.
Yeah,
you can lay up, sure, but I think most guys go for it now, and you're doing it with the ball way above your feet and the green. You want to hit a fade for a righty into that green, so it's really hard to do with the ball way above your feet. So I think that one's really fun. We've seen some fun shots out of the pine straw on that hole, some like clutch eagles and some shots that find the creek. So that one's fun. I also love hole 3, which is like somewhat drivable sometimes in the right conditions. And if you get the pin in certain spots on the green, it's quite tough with the slope. So I think that's just a really fun kind of underrated hole.
Yeah.
Hole that I think is overrated. I'll give a very specific example. I'm not saying 18 is overrated, but I think 18, the Sunday pin, is overrated. I would much rather they put the pin in the back on Sunday.
Yeah.
Because the back pin is so much harder than the pin on the left front of that green.
Yeah.
If you're coming down the stretch and you have a one stroke lead, I think trying to make par to that back pin is just so much harder. So I wish they would put it in the back pin. But really, I like pretty much every hole at Augusta, to good be take. Honest.
C-Tit, what's your favorite hole?
Okay, I got two for different reasons. So 12, I love because short, tough par threes are just awesome. Like they're usually so unique and like they're so sick. And I love that wide, it's hard to explain, but that camera angle they use where it's like way back and it's wide and you kind of see that entire hole and like how big it is. It just looks really cool. And then you get like such a nice view of the flight. And then 15, I love 15 just because it's the last par 5. It's like guys are going to make a run. You see them like, and the green is also so narrow. It looks narrow to me front to back on TV. Shallow. I think it is shallow. That's a word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And the skill to hit like a high long iron there. I know it's downhill, so that helps a little bit with like stopping the ball in time, but it's still just so ballsy. Like I couldn't imagine how much, if you're in contention there, how much your hands are shaking, hitting they're hitting like what, 6 iron in now typically, but still.
Yeah, they stretched it back a little bit too, but 5 or 6 iron usually.
That hole back in the day when guys were hitting 2 iron into it was just even sicker too.
Yeah.
So I love 15. Overrated hole. It's so hard to answer at Augusta. Like every hole is so sweet. But I would kind of copy Braden too. 18, that Sunday pin, as that kind of doesn't make sense to me. When do they put it at the back? Friday?
I don't know. They kind of jump around.
The back pin is way better. The tee shot is really the only drama on that hole where it's like, okay, square up the club face and hit it through the chute. I'd love to see that chute just get even narrower. I want to see guys just dummy it off the tree more often. But 18 to me is usually when a guy's got a 2-shot lead there, it's nothing crazy is going to happen that comes to mind.
My answer for my favorite hole, I have a very similar answer to Bray. I think all of the par fives are extremely fun at Augusta. Like the shot that you hit into 2 is very fun. We saw a few years ago, probably a while ago, Louis made the 2.
2012.
The second shot into 8 is actually really cool. You can play it a bunch of different ways, and if they're showing the shot from behind, you can actually see how much the guys are trying to turn it from right to left. And
we've seen guys recently, we've seen guys hit high cuts over that corner now too. It used to be only you could only get there with a roping draw like Tiger did in 2011, but recently you can do it other ways now.
I will say that I actually did used to like 13 a little bit more before they moved the tees back a couple of times, because I thought that if you took on the trees on the left, you had a much bigger advantage. And now I feel like a lot of the guys are hitting it into very similar spots, and they have a little bit of a longer club in. And I thought it was kind of cool watching some guys like Rory and some of the guys that hit it higher actually trying to just go straight over the trees on 13 instead of trying to draw it around. And then obviously,
you want to hear something cool about 13, if I can interrupt you really quick.
Yes,
when
please.
We were there, the corner on 13 has those tall trees, and guys will on the practice rounds will precisely find out how close they can carve it left, but the tallest tree is actually on a guide wire, and on Thursday they slacken the guide wire and the tree limb actually falls over and cuts into that corner that these guys have been working on the whole week.
Come on.
Serious.
What the fuck? How did you know that?
Isn't that wild?
Where That's did you hear crazy. That?
Well, obviously, when we were on property, we were talking to a couple guys who worked there.
That is wild, dude.
Holy That's shit. Awesome.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Mike.
No, that's totally fine. And then you guys might disagree with this, but one of the more overrated holes, and I know it can be exciting, but for me, it's less exciting. The Sunday pin on 16, I'm not a huge fan of.
It's a funnel pin.
A funnel pin. And if you hit it in a general like 15 to 20 foot area, maybe even bigger than that, your ball is most likely going to end up in the exact same spot as everyone. And I'm not a huge fan of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my overrated hole pick, even though it's exciting, like seeing shots and seeing if you're going to make a hole in one and whatnot. But I just think it's on a Sunday, it's too easy.
So I had that one as mine, but then I thought of 05 chip in from Tiger, and I was like, I can't say that's my overrated hole. And it's also like the shot that I like became a golf fan, basically.
But it doesn't exist anymore. The chip doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
We saw a
great pen.
Sorry, Craig, go ahead.
Oh, I just said I think it's a great pen.
Of course you would.
I think it'd be sick though if they put it on top of the ridge on Sunday. I agree with Mike. Yeah. Give it a funnel pin on, I don't know, Saturday.
Moving day.
You just want to see pars? You're just a par guy, hey? You don't like seeing birdies? You don't
seeing leaders.
I like
having
seeing
to make
hard shots down the. I like seeing good shots down the stretch.
Okay,
how sick is it that a par three, step up to a par three, and you're like, okay, I have a good chance to get one back here.
I
can make a charge. I think that's way better.
Okay, yes. And part of the reason why the Masters always seems so close on Sunday is because the guys playing in the groups in front have those birdie opportunities. Mm-hmm. So you see the leaderboard, like say the lead's at minus 12, you see a bunch of guys moving from minus 8 to minus 9 to minus 10, minus 11, because they've gone through 13, 15, 16 with the funnel pin. So it creates that artificial drama of it's a lot closer than it actually looks. So,
but it puts pressure on the leaders though too.
It does. Yes, mm-hmm. It does. So I can go both ways. Like the funnel pin can be good for that too.
Craig has terrible takes today.
If they ever change that pin, the world's fucked. Like, you just know that's the last straw and we're all going down the wrong way. So,
All right. We're going to go to a more fun question now. And I'm going to go to Craig first. If you had a lifetime exemption at the Masters, how old would you be before you quit playing?
I'd be there till I can't walk. I feel like, because I'd still haven't made a cut, so I'd have to believe that I got a chance at like making the cut there. And yeah, I think I'd play till I'm like 80.
Chris, you might know this right off the top of your head. What's the oldest what's the oldest guy that's ever played there?
Oh, I don't know that. I would have to say probably longer.
No, like Larry Mize has played much older than longer currently is.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a great question. I just know that it would be like a scene out of Legend of Beggar Vance. Like, I'd be having a jammer walking down the fairway because I'm so old. Like, they'd have to drag my dead body off.
If you didn't break 100 one year, though, would you call it quits, Craig?
I don't. Yeah, it's embarrassing. But if you're playing there on a lifetime exemption, it means you won. So, like, fuck it. Like, yeah, I'd be like Chris. It'd be kind of cool to be the first guy to have a jammer on, like, the ninth fairway or something. And then they just you just die on Augusta. You'd get a plaque, like, for sure.
Yeah, they'd be like, look at how much people love this tournament. Guys are dying on the golf course.
Yeah, but you'd be holding up play and, like,
who cares?
If you won. Have won the Masters, though, you would have been looked at kind of fondly by most people. You don't want to be looked at negatively later in your life, though.
No. Honestly, you push past the negativity. So, like, yeah, you're gonna get some backlash when you're in when you're 67 and you're holding up play. But when you're 80, you're basically a new form of honorary starter, and, like, everyone's gonna be applauding. The rounds are gonna be 7 hours
with you. But imagine getting paired with that guy, though.
Well, yeah, but fuck it. Put one of the AMs with them. They don't care.
Sure. Fair enough.
Sam Bennett's just as slow.
That's true, too. Yes. I think if I didn't break 80 in either round for, like, 4 or 5 consecutive years, I'd probably hang it up. I don't know if I have a specific age, but that's when I'd do it.
Yeah, I think the Champions Dinner would be the most fun thing anyway. So, I mean, like, I don't know. In all honesty, like, when I'm distracting from the tournament, then I'd probably pull the chute. And the last thing you want to do is take the spot of someone who's younger, because it's an invitational, right? So they don't have the biggest field. So the last thing you want to do is see a tiny little Hevener rolling down the fairway because his legs aren't strong enough to keep him up. But,
I would say that as soon as I felt like I wouldn't be able to make a cut, even if I played really good, I would probably call it quits. Like, if I'm just going out there for 2 days to have a walk around because I like the grounds, I probably wouldn't be taking a spot of somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, let's go to, I want one memorable shot. I know we've touched on a few already. Chris, do you have a most memorable shot from?
Just one, buddy. Pick one.
Just one.
You guys are putting me on the spot. I have so many. In 88, when Lyle was he's tied for the lead. He put it into the fairway bunker on 18. And same sort of thing. They're super high-faced. He hit a shot to 10 feet, backed it up to 5, and dropped it for the win. I thought that was so fucking badass, man.
That's sweet. I've never personally seen that shot, but
terrible celly. I've got a Sandy Lyle glove, and I'm going to put it on the wall here, but it was just a terrible celebration.
People legitimately couldn't celebrate before Tiger. He was the pioneer of golf sellies.
Because it's all old white guys, man. Like, yeah. Not known for, like, charismatic, like, athletic movements.
Mr. Braden Brown, favorite shot.
Okay. I'm going 2017 Masters, Jordan Spieth, hole 13, Pine Straw. This was the first Masters after Arnold Palmer had passed away. He passed away in, I think, the fall before that. And Michael Greller, his caddy, and Spieth were kind of debating back and forth, like, what should we do? Spieth wanted to go for it. Mike wanted him to lay up. And Spieth goes to him and says, "Mike, what would Arnie do?" And
then I fucking hated that.
That was the fucking worst thing. Arnie,
so cringy, man. I can't believe you picked that.
But
that...
he pulled it off, though. It would have been brutal if he just chunked it into the fucking creek. But man, I think that was fucking sick.
Braden, that was fucking terrible. That was like Arnie was probably rolling over in his grave, hoping he'd lay, like, chunk the shit out of it and just see pine straw go everywhere.
Okay, well, I'm sorry you feel that way.
But do it for Arnie.
he didn't say do it for Arnie. He said, what would Arnie do?
Right. Sorry, my bad.
I respect you, Braden.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris. The two people that have been to the Masters, we respect great shots. and the great champions of the past, such as Arnold Palmer.
I think that's disrespectful to Arnie. Don't use his name like that.
I'm actually shocked that that's the one you picked, but
well, obviously we couldn't pick the ones that we'd already talked about.
You've laid your bed.
No, 2011 Tiger, second shot on 15, club twirl, walk after it. That one I watch every night before bed. So yes, that one's my favorite, but I had to pick a different one.
Oh, I might get roasted for this now after roasting Braden's. But you said memorable and not favorite, right?
Correct.
Okay. So not my favorite because I think everybody in the golf world hates this guy. Bubba's shot out of the trees in the playoff was fucking insane.
Yeah.
Like such a good shot. It sucks that it was Bubba.
Yeah.
But I hated him less back in 2012. So at the time, I thought it was kind of sick.
That crushed my heart. I was going for Louis so bad.
I was too. But I like Louis. That you deserved a win with that shot.
That was sick. I like Louis so much. Also, another one I had written down was Louis Albatross, but we had already mentioned that earlier. So I had to pick another one. That's why I picked Spieth. But yes, Craig, good pick. Do not like Bubba, but that shot from that spot in the playoff, absolutely sick.
Were you guys able to, was that part of the course open for you to walk on to see where he hit that shot from?
Yeah. There's a plaque down there.
But yeah, were able to walk there and see it?
Yeah.
Was it like nasty amount of curve that he needed?
Oh yeah.
Those bushes, I don't know what the name of those bushes are. They're huge, man. And he was blocked right out.
Yeah. I feel like this is the better shot and the more memorable shot from a very similar spot to Braden's, but Phil's shot on 13 from the pine straw back before like being aggressive and going for it from lies like that was like seen as a terrible thing to do. But that's a shot that I remember very, very much. And I believe Phil missed the putt if I remember correctly.
He did. So, yeah.
I didn't respect it enough until I heard him explain it on Faraday. Did you guys hear him talk about it all? How he broke it all down, the physics of why it was actually the smarter play? It was like a 5-minute explanation. Look it up. It's one of the coolest golf deep dives into why I did this that I've ever heard.
Can you summarize it in 30 seconds or less?
He basically explained that by hitting a longer club, there was less chance of catching pine straw in between the club face and the ball. So if you hit a pitching wedge, it had more loft. There's a chance of it digging and coming out fat.
I think Phil just tries to justify
that sounds
like
so
his decision. You know what I mean? Like
that could be justified by just punching a 6-iron 50 or 60 yards instead of trying to hit a pitching wedge.
Hey, he did it, though.
He did it. Yeah. Okay. We still have who do we like this week? There are some favorites. There are some people that need to win this week for their basically to keep their sanity. Rory.
He's gone.
Craig, who do you like this week?
I think the most underrated favorite and the one that I'm going to bet on personally is Brooks. I feel like Brooks still doesn't get enough respect.
Dude, he's like
20. You see his odds?
He was 20-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
No, and that's what I mean. Like he's playing LIV and he's playing pretty mediocre, I think, last I checked. But every major, like he did this when he was on the PGA too. He's so good at dialing his game in for the majors. He's had some pretty good finishes at Augusta too. I think he's the guy to put money on, especially at 20-1. And I'd love to see, my heart though is like, I'd love to see Rory. I think that's the best story. If Rory wins at Augusta, it's like the best golf story in a long time, besides obviously Tiger.
One of the things that I actually didn't remember about last year's Masters is that Koepka was leading going into the final round, and him and Rahm had a 6-shot swing.
Yeah.
He shot, I think Koepka shot 75 and and Rahm shot 69. So
Brooks started bleeding, leaking oil as soon as they started up the rest of the third round on the Sunday.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, who do you like this week?
Obviously, Scheffler aside, because like I would not be surprised if he won by 10. I like Matsuyama. I think he's trending. I think he's healthy. He's dangerous. If he can get like decent putting, he's a ball striker. A dark horse, I would like Cantley. He's plus 2,800 right now. He finished, his best finish was T9 when Tiger won. He held the lead briefly in 2019. What Braden was saying, he finished 15 as the guys hadn't hit a man corner yet. So he was kind of like fraudulently up the board. He's made 5 of 7 cuts at Augusta, and he's coming off like a T14 last year. So, I mean, like he plays really well at Augusta.
Yeah. I'm going to end this one with you, Braden, because I have the exact same answer as Chris. Matsuyama was my pick this week. So he's second in scrambling at Augusta since 2015, second in bogey avoidance at Augusta since 2015. Third in strokes gained a point in the last two majors, fourth in score to par at Augusta since 2020, and he's leading the tour in strokes gained around the greens. And he's one of, I believe, 8 guys that meet the criteria of strokes gained tee to green that could win this week. So okay. I really like Hideki's chances.
Are you throwing all 10 of your nuggies on him?
I am.
Okay. Craig, are you throwing all 10 of your nuggies on Brooks?
I am, yeah.
Okay. Very good.
I'm going to go 5 Brooks, 5 Rory.
Okay. My bets this week, I'm going to start with one that I do every year and basically every tournament that Tiger plays in now. It's not because I hate Tiger Woods. I love Tiger Woods. He's my favorite golfer, the best golfer of all time. Betting on him to miss the cut. You just got to do it. Sometimes you just got to... You got to put your head over your heart and you got to bet on something you don't want to happen. As Chris, before we started recording, I think he mentioned that he, the Masters he attended, he bet on someone that he didn't want to win and he ended up winning, which was Patrick Reed. So I'm betting on Tiger to miss the cut. Do not want it to happen. But
and what was the ruling? What was the ruling on a withdraw earlier this year? Is that a missed cut?
That was a win for me. Yep. It counted. So yeah, that's a likely possibility as well that he just pulls out for whatever reason. My heart is with Rory. I would love to see Rory win. I would also love to see Ricky win his first major. He's got a fairly long odds, but I'm not picking him. I'm picking Will Zalatoris to win at 40-1, which seems really crazy. He's had a really good major record, like obviously not one, but he's someone who hits his long irons very well. There's a lot of long iron shots, obviously, with the par fives and like hole four, long par three. I don't know why his odds are so long, so they seem a little crazy. And then an even longer shot. I don't know why this guy popped up, but I just did a Masters draft with another friend group, and Russell Henley was kind of the talk of the town. He went fairly early in the draft, so I'm just gonna go with someone else's homework and Georgia say I'm kid, right? Sorry.
He's a Georgia kid, isn't he?
He's a Georgia kid. Yeah. He's a Georgia kid. And I guess he's popping up in the data golf strokes game thing. So I'm going to put some 2 units on Russell Henley, 3 on Willie Z, and then 5 on Tiger to miss the cut.
Is putting like important at Augusta? Okay. Yeah. Willie Z is a good pick, Bray.
Thanks. No, he's actually, right before this, I was listening to No Laying Up. Guess who's been second in strokes gained putting over the last 5 Masters? Will Zalatoris.
I don't care. You can't tell me if he has a 1-shot lead, he's making a 6-footer or 3-footer for par.
Guess what, buddy? Broomstick. I hate the broomstick, but he's got one and it's working.
Yeah, I think a broomstick might win this week as well. So
Akshay
is gonna win. No. So this is the list I wanted to bring up earlier. So 10 of the last 12 Masters winners have been 1.7 strokes gained tee to green or better the last 3 months leading into the Masters. And the qualifiers for that this year are Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Hideki, Siwoo, who I believe is using the broomstick now, Rory and Justin Thomas. And it does not include guys on the live like Neiman or Rahm, but that is basically the list that the stats is spitting out that could win this week. Take it as you will.
Very good.
Before we move on to cancel culture, is there anything else you guys want to touch on from the Masters?
Did we want to talk field size? Like, it's a smaller field.
Yeah.
Okay. So my take on it is some people say that the Masters is the easiest major to win. Obviously, getting in, like once you're in the field, the easiest major to win, which is probably true, just given the field size. It is a small field. This year, there's 88 players. And like 10 of them, 15 of them are drawing dead. Like they're the old guys that have absolutely zero chance of winning. And amateurs that have basically zero chance of winning. But that being said, I'm never watching the Masters and being like, ooh, I wish so-and-so fringe guy that didn't get in was in this field. Like every Masters, I'm just like, the leaderboard's awesome. The drama is usually awesome on Sunday. And it doesn't bother me that the field is a little bit smaller.
Do you feel like the field, do you feel like the field is missing a couple guys this week because of the some live guys not qualifying?
I don't. Like, there's 17 live guys in there. Yeah. Like, Taylor Gooch. Sure. But I'm not going to be watching and be like, man, I really fucking wish Taylor Gooch was on my TV screen right now. Like, I'm not going to be saying that. I don't care. No, the guys on live that I want to see there are there. I'm actually really excited to watch Bryson play. Like, I like watching Bryson play golf. And now that he's on live, I just don't watch live. And so I don't get to watch much of him. I'm very excited to watch Bryson play golf again.
Yeah. Chris, how do you feel about the field size?
I think it's good. I think Augusta knows what they're doing. I mean, the people who deserve to be there are there. I think they balance it really nicely with Asian Pacific amateurs, U.S. amateurs, fucking Hagestad, who has the greatest life in the world. I, like Braden said, like, I love the U.S. Open because anybody can make it, but I don't think that a giant field size would make the Masters better.
Yeah.
The one tee start is really cool. If they had a big field, you have to do two tee start. Everyone teeing off hole one is pretty cool. And unique.
Yeah, I like that too. That's a good point. Anything to add, Craig?
No, everything at Augusta, this is nothing to add, but everything at Augusta works perfectly, and it only works perfectly for Augusta. Like, they're the only ones that can pull this off, and it just makes it like, that's why it's the best.
Yeah, totally agree. I don't want to stop talking about it just because it's so fun, but I do want to get into cancel culture a little bit for this week. Chris, do you have anyone you want to cancel?
Yeah, I want to cancel Bones.
Ooh, what?
I don't understand how it comes about a week before a major that all of a sudden you're just going to part ways. Like, unless JT behind the doors is like a certifiable lunatic, like, why now? Why are you packing up shop now? If JT was struggling, I think Bones would have like the wherewithal to be like, hey, let's stay together for the Masters. Then we can talk about it. I mean, you can move on to the Travelers and hire a buddy, who cares? But I feel like he's got more experience than to just let JT kind of float downstream by himself. But that's just me.
So was it Bones that left JT? I thought it was time.
It's a mutually parting of ways, but I mean, that, take that for what it is. I don't know what that means if they didn't click, because I mean, they won the PGA together. Clearly it was working. I think maybe JT's just getting super frustrated with his own play. I don't know. I'm speculating, but I think with Bones's experience, I think he should have like ponied up and been like, look, like, you need someone very seasoned on the bag. He's got three jackets with Phil. Like, he knows that course better than arguably half the players there.
Yeah.
right? Like, why would you not want that asset in your corner?
That's so true. But good point.
I'm gonna go the other way, and I'm gonna say that JT's one more caddy away from being officially a caddy whore. Right? Like, JT's kind of working like the east side, like as a little bit of a, you know, he's shopping like every couple of years now for a new caddy. So I don't know.
That's true. I don't want the possibility of Craig or Bray to take my cancel this week, so I'm gonna go next. I'm partially canceling Jordan Spieth, and I'm partially canceling the rules of the PGA Tour, because if you saw what this fucking guy did on the 18th hole,
that's out of Happy Gilmore
on Saturday. This was the most egregious like attempt to like play by the rules and break the rules. This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. This, did you see this, Craig?
No, so this is great because I didn't watch. So fill me in and fill the listeners.
Hey, so
okay, Mike can explain it, but you need to also
watch. I've seen the video, but I don't know what came of it. So I saw him hit the ball on the roof.
So he hits it. Chris, you might even know this better than me. So he hits it right off the tee, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then he tries to punch out, and he punches out way left into a hazard. And he's trying to figure out what to do with his next shot. And he's like going through his options. And he's like, oh, what if I just blast it onto this roof over here?
The clubhouse.
The clubhouse roof. And he hits it onto the roof.
He confirmed it wasn't out of bounds. And he like literally said, I'm going to blast it onto the roof.
How is that not out of bounds? And then he gets a free drop, hits it onto the green. And I love that he three putted and made double. But he had a chance to make par. But it was the most, I cannot believe how this was allowed.
Is a clubhouse always out of bounds, though?
No, you know what the best part is?
Is it out of bounds? If you don't have the camera there watching where your ball lands on the roof, you're not going to be able to say, oh, my ball's right here. It was in a fucking drainage pipe.
But the best part is, Breller knew right away. Like, tell me you don't work with a psychopath that Breller's like, he already knew the clubhouse is inbound.
Yeah. Big Mike did his homework. He knew what was up. I'd say 99% of clubhouses are out of bounds. It was just like at your local course, it'll be staked or it'll be marked with white line, like where the line is. I guess this one's just not. And it's just part of the course.
It's just, but it's just not the same. It's not the same rules for me and for Spieth. If I'm playing a regular round with my friends and I blast one into the clubhouse, I can't say, oh, my ball's on the roof, I'm taking a free drop.
I know. And also, Chris just said TIO, which is the relief he got. The fucking clubhouse is not a temporary immovable obstruction. It's the goddamn clubhouse.
It's in a gutter and you can take the gutter off.
Yeah, good cancel, Michael.
Craig, who are you canceling?
I'm canceling Mike Bell this week.
Wow, that's so direct.
There's two things I like in life. I like drinking, and I like hanging out with my friends. And Mike tells me about all his fun times at the John B, and I never hear about it until after. So I think he's a scumbag fake friend. And I think he needs to be. I think Mike arguably gets a suspension next week from the pod, and we bleep his name out.
Oh, harsh.
Okay. I'll remember that. Brayden, you're up.
Okay. I'm going to read to you a text message that I received from a friend today. And he is a friend that is a former pod guest. So I'll let you put two and two together. He sends a TikTok that it's a TikTok that the Masters put out of everyone speed walking to one of the holes. He says, one of the reasons I'm not totally enamored with going to the Masters, I never want to look like this of the people speed walking. Buddy, let me tell you, you want to be at the Masters. If you were a golf fan and you are not totally enamored with going to the Masters, I don't care if you look like a duck speed walking. It doesn't matter. We mentioned it at the start of this pod. it is golf heaven. Not a thing is out of place, from going to the bathroom, getting a beer, walking down the fairway, seeing some guys stripe some golf shots from the purest grass you'll ever touch. It is the best thing ever. If you're a golf fan, you want to go to the Masters at least once in your life.
No,
you
gotta try. It's okay, because if he doesn't want to speed walk and he doesn't put his name into that lottery, that's one less guy.
That increases our odds. Yeah.
Imagine thinking you're too good for the Masters.
Yeah.
That's a great cancel. But I just have a slight secondary cancel, and I put this in our group already. It's from the Twitter page on Flushing at Golf. They have a podcast, and I think they have like 50,000 followers, and they tweeted this today. They said, "Throwback to Louis Oosthuizen's Albatross," and then in quotes, "triple birdie on the second hole at Augusta in 2012. Whoa. I don't think I've ever heard the term triple birdie before in my life.
That's got to be tongue-in-cheek. There's no way someone is doing that legitimately.
That's brutal. Although I do like that better than double eagle, because double eagle doesn't even make fucking sense. Double eagle would be
four under.
Yeah, an eagle is two under. A double eagle is not three under. It's four. It makes no sense.
Yeah, so I'm canceling the term triple birdie.
Okay, good take.
I like it.
If we have nothing else to touch on, I'll leave the floor open if anybody wants to say anything more today. Chris, you got any more amazing Augusta tidbits for us?
One last one. I wasn't around for it. I didn't see it on TV, but there has been one double eagle on 15. It was in 1935. Gene Saracen tagged a four wood off the downslope and canned it. He was trailing by three and ended up beating Craig Wood that year. Craig Wood was in the clubhouse leading by three, thinking he was safe. Bobby Jones had just made it to the top of the 15th crest and watched Saracen tag this four wood.
Is there footage of this? Or are you just like,
making this up? I believe you.
Oh, I want to know how many chairmen he can name.
Chris, could you name every, not chairman, could you name every Masters champ since like 1980? Don't do it, but like, could you?
Yeah.
Really?
Jesus
You're
Christ.
A sick pup.
The runner-up?
Could you do it from like ever? Like the earliest Masters?
I'm working on it. I lose it mid-70s.
Oh my God.
Holy shit, dude.
That's so good. We're gonna next time we have you on, we're gonna have you recite the list.
Yeah.
Or you guys can just pull dates out, and instead of going down one by one, you guys can just pull dates out.
1992.
Couples.
I could have got that one.
Okay. Good. Good to know.
Good test.
Good test. Good test.
1995. That's Crenshaw.
Jesus Christ.
Is someone fact checking this?
No, but I trust him.
I believe him.
I trust him. He didn't get the Eisenhower tree on the right hole, though. So
Yeah, that was a little shocking.
That's one about me.
Do you know the name to every hole?
I did when I went. The fun fact, though, Golden Bell, the 12th hole, is the only hole that's been renamed. It was initially Three Pines. They didn't like that one.
Holy shit.
Dude, how do you know all this?
It's when you're a psychopath and you love something, like it's just not even work. You know, Gretzky didn't practice a day in his life. Well,
all right, boys, this has been incredibly fun. I can't wait for this year's Masters. I'm very excited for our Masters pool draft that we have on this Wednesday coming up. It's always a good time. And yeah, it's just the best week of the year for golf. Hope you all enjoy it. Hope you all enjoy this podcast. This is the Bounce Back Bogey.
Motherfucking Masters week. See you guys next week.
Can't wait. See you next week. Thanks for coming on, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
My pleasure, guys.